This is the story of the one. Who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Tuesday morning to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thank you for tuning in today. In a little while, we'll hear from McCray Hepler and talk a little bit about the, well, everything that's happening down there at Exit 2. Have you seen video, or have you been down off of Exit 2 and you got the new Smith store open? You got shopping plazas opening. You got new restaurants. You got it. If you haven't been down there in a while, you ought to go check it out, because it will blow you away. Yeah, we'll get McCray to talk about that a little bit today. He also has a report on Tech Ridge. Have you seen the stairs on the backside of Tech Ridge? The hill, the mesa where the airport, the old airport is now Tech Ridge. But they built, somebody, I don't know who paid for it, but there is a, I want to call it the stairway to heaven, right? There is a stairway that climbs the entire hill. It goes bottom of the hill to the top of the hill, no railing, just these concrete steps. And, I don't know, man. I don't know that I could do that. That's a long hike. In fact, I had a couple of friends of mine who are in extremely good shape, who mountain bike and do all kinds. They climbed it and they said, I probably should have wore a heart monitor or brought some oxygen with me, because by the time you make it to the top of those steps, and I don't know how many there are, but by the time you make it to the top of them, you're pretty winded. I figured, just eyeballing it, it looks like there's maybe 200 steps, maybe 250. Now, by comparison, so I was able to go to Europe this past summer, and the cathedral in Cologne was, first of all, blew me away how big it was, how spectacular it was, how intricate the art on the outside of it was. Inside too, but the outside was just, statues and gargoyles. It was just amazing. So anyway, they have it is the largest two-tower cathedral in the world. And so they have these two towers. And one of the things that people like to do, you can get a T-shirt if you will. I guess you could lie, but you get a T-shirt if you climb the inner stairs up to the top of the towers. And it's 200 and I want to say 254, 256 steps, something like that. It is quite the hike. And no, I did not do it. No, I was not interested in doing it, actually. I'm not big on heights anyway. And then to climb all those stairs, and I'm on vacation and I got the bum leg, I was just like, no, not interested. No, thank you. Go ahead. You guys climb it. I think my brother would have done it. He didn't, because he had his wife with him, and she didn't want to do it. But I think he would and could do it. My brother's run 10 marathons, so he's in pretty good shape. That stairway climbing up the backside of Tech Ridge is the real deal. You ain't fooling around, right? And I didn't see any kind of railing either. And maybe somebody who's climbed it can correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't see a railing. I didn't see anything to hold on to. It's not a straight shot, but it kind of zigzags a little. But it's a long, long stairway, I guess, for lack of not a stairwell. It's not enclosed. It's out in the open. But go online. You can go on Facebook. I think Daniel Larkin posted about it. I know that Dave Hyatt here from Town Square Media wrote a story about the stairway. And as far as I could tell, there's no railing, and it's just this big, long climb. And, now if you're in good shape, if you're listening and you're an athlete, or a former athlete who is in pretty decent shape, go ahead and do it and let me know. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do that. The stairway is done. I believe it's as many or more stairs than climbing to the top of the cathedral in Cologne, Germany. That's a lot of stairs. I climb stairs when I do ball games. Crimson Cliffs has the largest bleachers, by the way. You climb the initial stairs to get onto the bleachers. That's maybe 8 steps. And then you get to you have to climb the bleachers to get up to the press box. And that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 46 stairs to get into the press box from the bottom of the Crimson Cliffs bleachers, which doesn't sound like that many, but after about 35, 32, something like that, the last dozen steps or so are way harder than the first 36, the first 36. Because especially if you're carrying, I usually have radio equipment with me and a computer bag and stuff. And yeah, by the time I hit those last 12, I'm like, yeah, just as soon not at this point. But and that's why early in my career, I used to go climb up the steps and set up my equipment. And then I would go back down to the field and talk to coaches and they'd go back up the steps because I was young and it was no big deal. Now when I talk to coaches, I talk to them before I go up. Like, yeah, I'm not doing that twice, coach, so let's talk now. We just had a Brandon Hansen was on. People know he's a big Ute fan, and he was heartbroken about what happened last Saturday night. The game was, let me catch you up on what happened. BYU made a field goal with 3 seconds left to beat Utah. 22-21. And a lot of you are not sports fans and you don't really care that much, but just a couple of things happened that I think are more than sports related. They're general interest. So at the end of the game, there's like a minute and a half left. BYU is out of timeouts and they're down at their own like 9-yard line or something. Utah had punt, kind of trapped them in deep. So it's fourth down. BYU has got to get a first down or Utah takes over. They run the clock out and the game's over. So they hike the ball and BYU's quarterback rolls out. He kind of runs to his right in the end zone and it looks like he's about to get sacked. Only he kind of throws the ball out of bounds on purpose and you're like, what is he doing? Well, it was so loud in Rice Eccles that BYU had actually called a timeout. The referees had blown the whistle, but nobody heard it. So they hiked the ball and the play went on. And then about halfway through the play, the BYU quarterback said, oh, wait, there is no play here. And that's why he threw it out of bounds. He just said, okay, I don't want to get hit. So I'm going to throw the ball away and we'll redo this thing. So that was fourth down number one. Now fourth down number two is after the timeout, then they come out to play and BYU, the quarterback, this time he's to his left a little bit. He gets sacked and taken down at the 1-yard line. Game over, right? Utah just has to kneel down. I think a lot of people, like, honestly, I felt like, oh, well, that's it. It's over. But there was a penalty. And the penalty was on the University of Utah. One of the defensive backs was called for holding. Now, I've watched the video probably 10 times of it happening. And I'm going to go down the middle on this one. Utah fans aren't going to be happy. BYU fans aren't going to be happy. To me, it could have gone either way on this holding call. He definitely contacted him, but I didn't see him, like, grab. Like I said, some of my BYU fan friends are going to be like, dude, you're betraying us, whatever. But anyway, they called defensive holding, whether you think it was or not. I think it was a 50-50 one. And with the referee standing right there, probably going to call that penalty nine times out of 10 just because it was right in front of the official. Anyway, BYU gets a first down on that penalty. Then over the next minute and 20-something seconds, BYU is able to complete some passes and move the ball all the way inside the Utah 30-yard line. And to make a long story short, they kick a field goal with 3 seconds left. It gives BYU a 1-point, 22-21 lead. At that point, Utah tries a little, you know, a little lateral thing on the last play of the game. It doesn't work, and BYU wins it 22-21. Now, Utah fans are upset. They thought they had it won. The penalty kept the game alive. They don't, you know, a lot of them don't think that was actually a penalty. After the game, the athletic director, so this is a guy not just in charge of football, he's in charge of basketball and gymnastics and all the other sports at the University of Utah, goes into the locker room of the Utes, and these guys are upset, obviously. They just lost a game, and they lost a game on what many of them felt like was a bogus call. So he leaves the locker room. This guy's name's Mark Harlan, leaves the locker room and goes straight to the post-game interview room where all the reporters and the TV cameras and the writers and the radio guys, they're all there in this post-game interview room and getting ready to talk to BYU coaches and players because they won, and they were getting ready to do some interviews. Well, this Harlan guy goes in and grabs the microphone and proceeds to say things like, let's see, I'm thoroughly disgusted with the professionalism of the Big 12 officials. He said, we were excited about being in the Big 12, but tonight I am not. And the culminating it all with, let's see, he said, I have been an athletic director for 12 years. This game was absolutely stolen from us. So, you know, heat of the moment, just came from the locker room, feeling upset. Somewhere in his brain, this is the AD guy, right? The man that's responsible for the whole public relations of the entire athletic department. Somewhere after coming out of that Utah locker room, he goes, I'm going to go in there and talk to reporters, and I'm going to tell them that we got ripped off. A fan would do that, right? I would do that. If I was a Ute fan, or if, you know, if maybe if there's a no call on that one and Utah takes over, and I guess I would be upset they didn't call that, right? But I'm not an athletic director. I'm not in charge of the entire multi-million dollar athletic department at the University of Utah. And I feel like, and yes, I'm a BYU fan, but I think Utah fans are actually agreeing with me on this one. What Harlan did was very, very bush league, very amateur, very childish even, to go in there, grab the microphone in front of all the media, rant about how his team got ripped off and how his conference is unprofessional and how they can't believe that, you know, they were excited to be in the conference. They don't want to be in it anymore and all those things. I just, you know, every Utah fan that I've talked to said, yeah, he shouldn't have done that. Not some of them. Every Utah fan that I've talked to said, yeah, he expressed what I was feeling, perhaps, but he shouldn't have said it. He shouldn't have said it in front of the media. As an athletic director, you know, your job is to diffuse some of these situations, and he didn't diffuse anything. And so, anyway, the fallout is still happening. The Big 12 fined Mr. Harlan $40,000. Now, I think this maybe should be talked about more. Nobody's talking about it. I did some research on the fine. The $40,000 will likely not come out of Mr. Harlan's paycheck, which is, you know, I think he makes over $300,000 a year. It will not come out of his paycheck. It will likely be, this was the words that they used when I asked about it, it will likely be absorbed by the athletic department. $40,000. Because he lost his cool and grabbed a microphone and ranted after the game. I think he should have to pay that himself, right? He's the one that couldn't control himself. I just feel like he lost it, man. He lost it. And as an athletic, you know, there's certain things you can lose it. Like if you're playing fantasy football and, you know, some dude that has 4 points all year scores 34 on, and your buddy beats you, you can rant, right? You can whine and rant and I can't believe, you know, whatever. I mean, it's happened to us. But there's some areas where you shouldn't rant. Number one is the athletic director. If you're the AD, Don't go off, right? Don't do that. That's just, it's so Bush League. It's so amateur sounding. I mean, Utah, I know they are struggling right now. They were preseason picked to win this conference. The Utes currently have a 1-5 record in the conference. Their star quarterback got hurt. Some question how good he was in the first place, and then they really didn't have any decent backups. The freshman Isaac Wilson turned out to, at least so far, be a bust. This guy they had playing Saturday night, his name is Brandon Rose. He was, he's a good runner, but not a great passer. And the Ute fans are frustrated and disappointed. I understand that, but to have the head of your organization lose it, just go off. That's not cool. By the way, the other situation, I think it behooves us to not go off, but to let the mature side of things rule, is when we're parents at our kids or grandparents at our kids' games. I can't tell you. I used to referee rec games when I was younger, a lot younger, and mom and dad were the worst offenders. I didn't have any problem with coaches. I didn't have any problem with coaches. I didn't have any problem with assistant coaches. I didn't have any problem with players. The only time I ever had a problem was some fan, some dude sitting on the sideline yelling at me or at one of my kids or one of the kids on the field. It was parents. I remember one year I was coaching flag football. My son, maybe both of my sons were on the team. I have sons that are 15 months apart. But we had a special needs kid on our team. And, I did what I could to make him fit in, and I ended up making him a lineman, right? So, you got your flag football, you got like 3 or 4 linemen, and you got the skill guys running around throwing the ball and things like that. So this kid was a lineman on my team. Well, during the course of the game, you call the plays, you do whatever you can to try to help these kids succeed. Well, this special needs kid, as a lineman, he was reaching out and grabbing other kids. And, it was obviously a holding penalty, but I knew he was a special needs kid. The other coach knew he was a special needs kid, and the officials knew he was a special needs kid. But apparently this grandpa on the sideline didn't know that, or maybe he knew but didn't care. And he started hollering at me. And at that age, I think 9-year-olds, maybe 8-9-year-olds, right in there, 10-year-olds. At that age, the coach gets to stay kind of on the field. You're kind of back behind the play. So when they come and do their huddle, you can call the plays for them, and then you can kind of help direct them. Anyway, this guy from the sideline starts hollering at me, just using vulgar language and hollering about this kid holding, and the referee in the game, I think there were two of them, but they were both teenage kids, so they didn't know how to handle this old guy who was being belligerent. I didn't know how. I actually looked over at him and said, "Why don't you shut up?" I actually said that. "Why don't you just shut up?" And he wouldn't shut up. In fact, he got louder at that point. So about 20 minutes later, 20, 25 minutes later, Barry Blake came over. Barry was the director of recreation in Washington City. And Barry came right onto the field. It was during a break in play. He came right on the field and he said, "Hey, Andy." I said, "Hey." He said, "Who's the guy that's been hollering, that's been belligerent?" And I just said, "It's that guy right over there." And I knew exactly which guy it was. And Barry went over to the guy and invited him to leave and never come back to a rec league game in Washington City. Because you've got to be mature enough to not sit on the sideline and say stupid stuff. The kids are looking at you. How do you think that grandkid or that guy felt when his grandpa was over there hollering at the other coach, cussing at the other coach, cussing at the referees, cussing at a kid, an autistic kid, on the offensive line? How do you think his grandson felt about all that? "Hey, Grandpa, thanks for being an ass." I mean, pardon the French, but he was. Oh, man. And, I think that's probably what Utah fans are feeling right now. Hey, Mark Harlan, thanks for being a jerk. Thanks for, you know, we were already hurting, and then you went and embarrassed us, and you ranted. And then, as it turns out, your immature decision to go out there and rant, it's not even going to cost you anything. It's going to be, quote, unquote, absorbed by the athletic department. Wow. All right. I want to talk about Angelica's for a minute. Have you been to Angelica's Mexican Grill? First of all, let's play the sounder. Angelica's is AG approved. Now, Angelica's Mexican Grill is right downtown, 101 East St. George Boulevard. If you have an opportunity, man, get down there. It is so good. They offer, everything is fresh. So it's not like you go to, say, a fast food Mexican place and everything's been frozen and all they do is unthaw it and stick it in the steamer or the microwave and then serve it to you. This is all fresh, authentic. They've got real cooks, real chefs right there on the line making your meal fresh for you. Their salsa is not that kind, you know, like a paste or whatever that comes in a jar and it will last till the nuclear holocaust. Now, this is fresh salsa made every single morning at Angelica's. I'm sure you've heard our pepper commercial about Angelica's, and it is salsa heaven right there on the salsa bar. They have the roasted peppers. They have the three different kinds of salsa. They have the cilantro and onions, and one of my personal favorites is the lime wedges. I've said it before. I love to get the quesadilla with the sweet pork. I put green salsa and then I squeeze fresh limes on it. It is, it's making me hungry right now is what it's doing. Angelica's Mexican Grill again, 101 East St. George Boulevard. Great food and a great experience. They'll bring out the inner Mexican in you at Angelica's Mexican Grill. Angelica's is AG approved. Now let's check weather.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 933. Let's get McCray Hepler going here. McCray, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing great. Now, before we get into the couple of spots I wanted to talk about, Art texted me and wants to know what's going on down in Little Valley, the corner of 3000 East and 2450 South on the north side. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, just a lot of dirt moving right now, mostly for the residential part that's going to be up on the west. Kind of the west, I guess south and northwest. It is the north side of 2450, on that big property, quite a bit of residential is planned, and then there are some talks of a grocery center going in there, but nothing official just yet.
We'd all love it to be Trader Joe's, but I know that that's that's the most famous topic in St. George. So,
yep.
All right,
that'll happen one day.
Let's talk about Tech Ridge first. Got to see your video on Tech Ridge. First of all, I'm calling them the Stairway to Heaven. McCray, did you climb those stairs?
I have not climbed them yet, no. But it is on my list. It is on my bucket list to do.
How many do we think there are? I know a couple of people I know climbed them and said that was not for the weak of the faint of heart at all.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
It's 350 stairs.
350? Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I want to say it's the equivalent of Greater Zion Stadium. I'm pretty sure it's six of those.
Wow. Well, I was telling you earlier on the show, I was talking about that giant cathedral in Cologne. It was only, I think it's only 250-something steps to the top of the cathedral. So this is another 100 beyond that. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it is going to be a feat to accomplish, that's for sure. They're actually going to have a race up it in January.
Really?
Kind of kick it off. Yeah, they're just about finished with it all, so.
Mark me down as not interested in that race. I don't want to. Maybe if, I actually might do it if they'll put a railing in, because right now there's no rail, right?
They are putting a railing, yeah. Okay. That's part of what they still have to finish, is it's going to be a full-on railing I think they may even have like a couple on a few of the platforms. They may have like little covered areas too, I want to say, but okay. For sure they're doing railings though.
All right. Now, what about on top of Tech Ridge? What's the latest?
Yeah, so there's quite a bit going on up there. One of the exciting things just recently was they finished the container park that they've been working on for quite a while. It's right around the old FedEx hangar where Zonos, which is one of the tech companies that really helped spur the idea of Tech Ridge to even come about. They were actually in the works of creating an office space up there, and it was during COVID, and everything was taken way longer than everybody anticipated on various levels. And so they said, well, why don't we just go down and redo the old FedEx hangar? And so that was a few years ago. They went down and redid that, made it into a really cool office, but they were pretty crammed in there. And there was a couple other companies up there that were wanting to expand as well. And again, things just weren't moving fast enough. So they just decided, let's just see if we can build a container park up here right around this FedEx hangar. So Zonos has expanded into there, and then Busy, which is now called AlignOps. They were acquired last year by a big billion-dollar fund. Those two companies have entered into the container park, and they're just really cool. It's a two-level container, and they turned out really, really nice.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because I was just thinking, you know, when you first hear the word containers, you're like, oh, because I know they used to have them up at the Little Thunder Girls Camp and stuff. And it's like, yeah, not real nice, but they did them upright, huh?
Yeah, no, they're super nice. And they're going to have a little outdoor courtyard with it. The views are amazing. It turned out really cool. And actually, Zonos, so they were planning on just having that be kind of a temporary. They were really using the container park as a way to temporarily get tech companies up there while they figure out all the, because they're going through a whole bunch of infrastructure. They had to get all different kinds of infrastructure up there, as well as, you know, big buildings just doesn't happen overnight. So their idea was for that to be just a short-term solution, and it's really turned into a long-term solution for Zonos. And then Busy will just be in there until their building is finished, which is going to be on the backside of Dixie Tech, which are the next buildings that'll go vertical sometime the first of the year. It's really just, there's a new road. Well, they extended Tech Ridge Parkway, I think that's the name of it, that's right behind Dixie Tech. That just comes up when you come up to the top of the hill from Bluff Street. And you get to the Vasion building that's up there, which is just the first big tech company that went up there. Yeah. If you keep going down Tech Ridge Parkway, just follow it straight right behind Dixie Tech Technical College. There's a row of lots that are just about ready for buildings to go on. And Busy will go there, and they've got a couple other people lined up to go there as well. Those will be like 10 to 30,000 square foot buildings. And there will be, I think, 12 or 13 of those right along the backside of the college.
Are they going to run out of room up there before too long, or do you think they've got a while to go before they have to worry about that?
They've got a while to go. They've got plans for the whole ridge, but they are still just working through. Really, the infrastructure is what they just were approved for a PID, which is a public infrastructure district bond, and basically it's a bond that helps. With the build out of the infrastructure, roads, utility, all that kind of stuff. And that is actually set to begin in January. And then from there, I mean, it's not a ton. It's a big bluff, but it is limited. So there won't be just sprawling, you know, things that will be able to continue. There will be an end date, but they're still quite a ways from that. So.
All right. I only got you for a couple more minutes, so I wanted you to talk a little bit about what's going on down at Exit 2. Of course, we got the new Smith's open. That's the big news,
yeah.
But not the only news, is it?
No. I mean, that is a behemoth down there. A lot of stuff going on between the new Smith's opening up, and really that Sun River Commons is on that side of the freeway is really just one big master plan of different restaurants and retail and services, hotels. There's a couple of hotels in the works. There's a Les Schwab Tire in the works. There's a couple of restaurants. Del Taco is underway that I know a lot of people are super pumped about. In-N-Out is planned for down there. They've got a couple other restaurants in the works on that side of the freeway. And then on the west side of the or on the east side of the freeway, they've got that Moto United and Marine United. Mm-hmm. That Moto United is moving into currently, and then Marine United, which is the boats, that one will be, they're about 3 months behind, probably about 2 months now at this point. Sometime the first of the year, that whole thing will be occupied. And then the big empty piece of land next to it is the really big news that can't be announced as yet because it's not official, but it is something that a lot of people are talking about. Another big box retail store here, but no news yet on that. But hopefully
you're such a tease. You're such a tease. So my son McCray works out at Desert Color. He sells homes out there, and he's pretty excited about everything that's coming in. To me, it almost feels backwards. Like the development came first, and then the retail. It seems like in a lot of areas you got the retail first and then the houses come in to kind of fill in around it, at least the bulk of the houses. But at least we're getting there.
No. Actually, it is. Homes have to come first.
Okay.
Because restaurants and stores, shopping, all that stuff will not come until there's homes in the area. And even though Sun River's been down there, obviously, for years, hasn't been enough to really, really justify a lot of retail down there. And so that's why Desert Color had to get off the ground and get some homes out there because it's just too far. It's not that far, but it's too far away from a lot of traffic and housing around it to have justified it. But now, And that's what's hard is when you're the first ones down there, it's tough because you got to wait a little while.
Yeah.
But now it's just primed and they're moving fast. So
it kind of cracks me up. I have friends who are from originally from California, and you know, to get anywhere in California, we're talking about an hour. And when we say, I live down Exit 2, I got to drive all the way to, you know, Exit 10 and or Exit 8 and to shop, and it takes 20 minutes and just drives me crazy. My California friends are like, dude, if you only knew.
I know, right?
So I know you couldn't announce the big box store, what it's going to be, but anything you can announce, anything that we should be aware of that's going in down there?
No, well, that one, no, but in Desert Color, I haven't even got to that. In Desert Color, there's, let me pull it up real quick because it is a list. It is so in Desert Color over the next 6 to 8 months, starting within the next couple weeks, we're going to have Swig open up, Intermountain Golf Cars right next to Swig. In another building, there's going to be Chipotle and Pizza Hut by the end of the year, Jersey Mike's likely by the end of the year. And then first of the year, 2025, we'll have Mavi Med Spa, which is a med spa locally that they're doing a new location. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Mobetta's. The other one is Peach Wave Frozen Yogurt. That one is set for January or February. And we've got Rosie Nails. And then The Break, which is a sports bar that I've heard really good things about from Northern Utah. That's going to be just southeast of the Big Shots. So it's going to kind of be right in between Big Shots and then what will be the Megaplex, which is going to be the luxury movie theaters and luxury bowling. That's going to be a really big addition. That one, they're probably going to break ground next summer. And then a couple other things. You got a Mountain America Credit Union, America First Credit Union sometime next year, Fabulous Freddy's as well. And then they do have an LOI, which is it stands for letter of intent, which mm-hmm. is kind of like a reservation for a grocery in Desert Color. But no, nothing signed just yet. Just a possibility at this point.
It's amazing.
And then Intermountain Health is also doing their big campus out there starting in the spring. So, I mean, there's a lot going on.
It's amazing the growth in that part of the city. And yes, folks, that is still St. George City down there. I think a lot of people go. Somebody once told me, and I know you got to go, but real quick, somebody once told me that said that part of the city may one day incorporate and be its own city. Do you ever see that happening?
No, I don't see St. George letting go of that.
Okay.
There's some other potential. I mean, further east, there's a lot of land out, you know, like I think Warner Valley, areas like that, that who knows, maybe. But that area, I just can't see St. George giving up. But
they'd be in for a fight.
That's just my opinion.
All right.
I haven't heard anything like that. So
he's McCray, Hepler McCray. Thanks again. Eagle Gate Title is your company, right?
Yes. Yep.
Very good. Thank you, McCray. Look for him online,
folks.
Thank
you very much.
He even has his own YouTube channel, right?
I do. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn.
Very cool. Thank you, McCray.
Awesome. Thanks, Andy.
See you later. 9:46 now on KDX. We'll step aside for a minute. We'll have more for you when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you. A couple of things going on in the courts now. Let me put a little asterisk by them. One of them is in the court of public opinion. It is what's going on over in Washington City, where you have two city council members who one feels like the other one is way too spendy and wasting money. The other one feels like the other city councilman is just, you know, kind of a he said, she said. You're making blowing a lot of smoke when there's really no fire. There's a story on the Salt Lake Tribune website, sltrib.com. Now, I'm going to warn you that is a pay site. I think you get a certain number of stories for free. So if you never go there and you want to go check out the story, you should be able to read it for free. I think you get five stories for free, and then they want to charge you after that. So they won't charge you right up front. They'll say, hey, you have X number of stories left, four stories left, or nine stories, or whatever the number is. I hesitate to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. If you have used up your number of uses for that website, you can actually open your browser in incognito mode, and it won't recognize who you are, and then you can look at the story. Anyway, it's about, it's in the court of public opinion. It's basically one city council member accusing another one of being too spendy and wasting public funds. I kind of can understand that. I feel the same. I mean, if you live your life in a frugal way to make ends meet and live on a budget, and then your government does not, that doesn't seem right. But to what extent, I don't know. And the other city councilman that the accusations are leveled at says, no, I'm not doing anything unreasonable. I'm doing my duties. So that one is going on in the court of public opinion. In the actual court, there's a story today on Deseret.com about this. Here's the headline. Culture of hostility, culture of hostility, ex-Utah Tech president facing lawsuit over allegations of misconduct. The story is about Richard Biff Williams when he was president of Utah Tech. He's not anymore, by the way. He's now at Missouri State. Three former employees have filed a lawsuit accusing Williams of creating a culture of hostility, also of him being a part of, maybe the instigator, in a couple of off-colored activities or jokes, I guess. The incident in question is, one of his employees with the city, or with the, excuse me, not the city, with the university, had a vasectomy. Well, so Williams, and this has got on video, so this isn't up for interpretation or anything, but He drops off a gift, and this gift is, I'm trying to walk delicately here. This gift is arranged in such a way that it looks like male genitalia. And he wrote a note, and in the note, he didn't sign his own name. He signed the name of these three people. Broadbent, Rasband, and Sainsbury are their last names, although two of the three names were misspelled on the note. Anyway, without their knowledge or consent, he left their names on the note. Not his own name. His name wasn't even on the note. But it was clearly him on the video dropping this arrangement off. And anyway, they feel like this, they say that this is just one example of the way things were under Williams. Just a small example of the way things under Williams. I'm quoting right from the story. No, right from the lawsuit, rather. The vegetable display is just one incident in a long pattern of harassment plaintiffs say they faced at the university, which has, quote, continuously and openly flouted the protections of Title IX, says the lawsuit. Broadbent, Rasband, and Sainsbury, the lawsuit says, worked hard to establish an environment free from harassment and discrimination, yet in doing so, they faced resistance, intimidation, harassment, and retaliation from Utah Tech's highest leaders, including the man named in the lawsuit, Richard Biff Williams. So I am not a vindictive guy. I don't feel like, well, let's get Williams because he changed the name of the university. I don't think that, you know, that's as bad as the Utah athletic director going up and ranting in postgame, right? But if these allegations are true, independent of him changing the name, I know the folks at the name change, you know, Southwest Utah Heritage Coalition, the people that were against the name change big time are saying, hey, look, see, this guy was dirty all along. Well, maybe so, but that's, I don't think just because he changed the name that you should be extra mad at him. But this lawsuit certainly seems to have some meat to it, some substance to it. The lawsuit also describes the university and the Utah Board of Higher Education's investigation following the aforementioned vegetable incident as a, quote, sham and cover-up, saying the plaintiff's claims against Williams were dismissed after the former president announced his departure, since he was leaving anyway. They were like, we don't have jurisdiction over him anymore, so we're just going to let it slide, not worry about it anymore. That wasn't good enough, which is why the three of them said they filed the lawsuit, because once he left town, they felt like that the Utah Board of Education just said, yeah, we're going to sweep it under the rug. We're going to make it go away because he's not here anymore. It was just last December that Williams announced his resignation with the university after 10 years at the school. He was there long enough to change the name, I guess. I don't know. In July, he was named the 12th president of Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri. By the way, this is a story on Deseret.com, but also KSL.com. They said they reached out to Missouri State and received the following comment. And you know they're going to circle the wagons. This is what they said. The Board of Governors of Missouri State University is aware of the pending lawsuit and continues to have confidence in President Williams' ability to lead Missouri State University. We are committed to working alongside him to ensure that the university is a safe and welcoming environment to all students, faculty, and staff. As for Utah Tech, the St. George-based university has said it is aware of the complaint and is committed to working closely with all parties in resolving the situation. So there you go. What's going to happen with the lawsuit? No idea. I just in looking at the evidence, video evidence, and the actual physical evidence, I think they do have a leg to stand on. But what it would not any kind of money. It would be like, well, okay, he should be fired. Well, he doesn't work there anymore. So you can't fire him from Missouri State. You know, Utah Board of Education has no jurisdiction in Missouri. You could maybe sully his name a little, and you could say that he will never work at Utah Tech again, but what's that going to do, right? I mean, I don't think he's ever planning on coming back anyway. So, you know, I'm not going to say this is a frivolous lawsuit, and certainly those three people that filed the lawsuit, Broadbent and Rasband especially, said, you know, something needs to happen, but I don't know what they could do at this point. I don't think they could sue him for money. I think that would be silly. But and if they're looking to get him fired, well, he's already gone. So I'm not sure what you want. KDXU News Time. It is 9:59. Just click it at 9:59. I did want to go over the schedule coming up on the program in the next few days. Tomorrow will be the appearance of Mr. Steve Dunham. Love having Steve on. He's from the Washington County School District. On Thursday, Mayor Cress Staley will be on the show, and we will certainly won't be afraid of asking him about the story in the Salt Lake Tribune and the dispute. I have a feeling Mayor Staley's going to say, look, you know, this is between two guys, and we're just going to support them both and hope it resolves itself, and because he's the mayor, and that's what he's supposed to do. Next week on the program, Washington County Commissioners on. I think it'll be Victor Iverson. Also here from the Chamber of Commerce and Mayor Nanette Billings. By the way, tomorrow is Bake a Pie with the Mayor Day in Hurricane. Read about it on 890kdxu.com. $10, you get to bake a pie with the mayor. I think that's pretty cool.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.